I want you to remember, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, gang, and see you tomorrow.
This is the Quality News Network. Congressional committees are stepping up their investigation of the Bush administration today. The House Oversight Committee approved a subpoena for Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Rice, who was President Bush's national security advisor in 2003, is being subpoenaed to find out what she knew about key elements in the invasion of Iraq. The House committee also granted immunity to a former top aide to U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Senators from both parties continue their investigation into the Attorney General's involvement in the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. The senators, including Arlen Specter, have written Gonzalez, pushing him to respond to many of the more than 70 questions he declined to answer during last week's hearing before the Judiciary Committee. On Capitol Hill, the House is expected to vote today on a $100 billion war appropriations bill. The measure contains an October 1st deadline to bring the troops home. The president has vowed to veto any bill containing a timetable for troop withdrawal. Presidential candidate Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich has filed articles of impeachment against Vice President Dick Cheney. Kucinich claims Cheney deliberately lied to the American people in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq. Senator John McCain has officially announced his candidacy for president. In a speech from New Hampshire, the Arizona Republican and Vietnam POW says he is running for president to protect the country and keep it strong. If elected, the 70-year-old McCain would be America's oldest first, as strong earnings reports rolled in from some of the country's biggest companies. The boost is a sign that American corporations remain healthy despite a cooling economy. Wall Street numbers later in our business section. The UN says it is unable to furnish its usual report on civilian casualties in Iraq because the Iraqi government is withholding the information. According to the Iraqi government, the delay is due to a change in data collection methods and not due to politics. In Turkey, representatives from Iran and the EU resume talks focused on Tehran's uranium enrichment program. It will be with new Iranians. Last night, a tornado ripped through the border town of Eagle Pass, Texas, killing 7 in the U.S. and 3 in Mexico. The same storm system also brought tornadoes to Colorado and Oklahoma. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your car.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I've been thinking a lot about the horror at Virginia Tech, and I'm not exactly over it, nor do I think I want to be. There's something profoundly disturbing and sad and horrific that I think draws everyone to read, or at least me, shouldn't speak for everyone, to read, all the details of the attack, find out how it was inside the classrooms, to read about the horror. And yet, as I went through the newspapers today, a few things struck me that basically most people are good. Basically most people are trying to do good in the world. When I read that volunteers from the Blacksburg United Methodist Church handed out bags of homemade chocolate cookies to the students as they walked to their first classes, I don't know, it brought a tear to my eye. Or the Nice picture of the maroon and orange balloons filling the sky. Most people are good. So the question is, what can we do to prevent those very few who are so mentally deranged that they would do such an awful thing, to prevent such a thing from ever happening again? There's lots of questions, there's lots of issues, and I want you to join in and feel free to tell me your ideas. Basically, I think it comes down to better care for the mentally ill and absolutely better gun control. I was reading about Britain's gun laws, just comparing them to ours. They had an attack in 1996 in Scotland where a man came into a room, schoolhouse room, where they're mostly kindergartners, and shot 16 children. Most of the victims were 5 or 6 years old. Now, whatever the NRA says about, oh, we need to arm everybody so that you can prevent such a horrible thing from happening again, there would have been no solution in Scotland. I don't think anyone thinks that those 5-year-olds should have been armed. But Britain took action. They took action. And what they did is they banned handguns. You could still have rifles for hunting, but concealable handguns, weapons, sorry, can't have them. And they gave amnesty to people. More than 22,000 illegal or unwanted guns were turned in. Nearly 700,000 rounds of ammunition were turned in. And what has happened since? Well, there were 50 shooting deaths last year in all of England and Wales. An entire nation, maybe a fifth the population of ours, had 50 gun deaths. In the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C., last year, there were 137 fatal shootings. 500,000 people in D.C. suffered almost 3 times the number of shootings as all the people in England and Wales. Makes you think, doesn't it? Makes you think about our gun culture. When more people die in one city in America, not even including the suburbs, than an entire nation. And one of the things I learned that I didn't even realize until I started doing research for this show, until I did a show on Monday where I invited someone from the gun lobby and someone from Gun Control Advocates. Did you know that you can buy a gun in just about every state if you're 18 years old? But you can't drink until you're 21. I want you to think about that. Our nation views a Glock 17 semi-automatic as less dangerous than a beer and wonder about America's priorities. Another thing I've learned is that that age, 18 to 21, is a very troubling age for certainly a small minority of the population. But that is the age when mental illness really sets in. It's also the age, that strange age, where you have a young adult who is old enough to do a lot of harm, has the body of an adult, has the physicality of an adult, has the mind that can think through things and plans, but sometimes has the emotions of a child, the mentality of a child. And I'm certainly not speaking for all in that age, but those that are ill, it tends to strike right at that age. They're no longer under their parents' care. They're free to do what they want. And for some, that freedom leads to murder. So how do we have a drinking age that's higher than the gun age? How do we have a drinking age of 21 that's higher than the age to own a gun? Now, we can leave the drinking age discussion for another time if you want. I actually think it should be lower for lots of reasons. But clearly the age to own a gun should be higher. And clearly, everyone who wants to own a gun should go through the exact same training and registration, at least that we do to drive a car. After all, cars weren't made to kill people. They're made to get us places. Yes, they do kill people, but that isn't their primary function. Guns, particularly handguns, particularly those armed with hollow point bullets and semi-automatic, their primary function is murder. That is their goal. That's what they're designed for. You can't use a hollow point bullet if you're going to go out and hunt. Heck, you hit a deer, it'll blow up the deer. You won't have any venison to take home. It doesn't even aim as well. Hunters say that rifles aim better. But you can't conceal a rifle. Very hard to sneak a rifle onto campus. And hollow point bullets, in my view, should be reserved for police and for the Army. Even then, frankly, I have my qualms. But okay, police and Army. Why does an individual need hollow point bullets? A civilian. Why does he, and I'll say he, because 90%+ of these people are men. I know there's some women, but very few. I can't recall the last time I've ever heard a woman on a mass shooting spree. Has it ever happened? I guess someone will find some example. Certainly there are women that defend themselves and who are victims of domestic violence. But when's the last time you ever heard of a woman go point blank shoot people in the head as they cower under their desks? I haven't heard of one. So it's usually men. Men who want their guns, men who have strong insecurities for all kinds of reasons, and see the gun as their, well, we can think of all kinds of analogies. Let's just say it's a male sense of power, wanting power over others. But in England it worked. In England they got rid of it. In England they had 50 gun crimes last year. There were 55 gun crimes in 1995, and about 50 every year since. Fatal shootings, I should say. Actually, the number of gun crimes has actually gone up to 1,000. Compare that to the 10,000 fatalities in the United States and 100,000 gun crimes. And please don't tell me, as I've heard people in RSA say, oh, well, the District of Columbia banned guns, and look at all the gun murders there. I live here. I know how easy it is to drive across the river. Heck, you can take the metro and buy guns in Virginia. I have to give Virginia's governor, Tim Kaine, though, a lot of credit. He is a Democrat, and he is starting to change the culture of guns in Virginia. Virginia does not have a happy past with guns. In fact, just recently, the Virginia Senate refused to prohibit guns in daycare facilities. Why does anyone need a gun in a daycare facility? Just recently, Virginia refused to ban purchase of guns by unlicensed dealers at gun shows. Do you know about the gun show loophole? The irony is that even though, and I'm going to talk about this after the break, but even though Cho almost bought his gun legally, It's a little questionable because of the mental health stuff, and I'm going to get to that after the break and really spell it out in detail. But basically, he didn't have to worry about the forms. All he had to do was go to a gun show, pick up an ad in the newspaper, buy from a private citizen. Heck, he got some of his stuff on the internet, ammunition from Idaho and clips from eBay to store them in. It's very, very easy to buy guns in the United States. Very easy. Too easy. It is easier to buy a gun than it is to drive a car. Frankly, I wonder if it's not too easy to drive a car these days with all the car accidents we have. But over the next hour, I want to explore gut feelings, my gut feelings, your gut feelings. How did Virginia Tech hit you? What did it make you think? Policy concerns, guns and mental health, or just, I don't know, just the agony of thinking, what would you do if you were in that room? I also want to celebrate some of the heroes of Virginia Tech. some of the people who gave their lives to save others, to remind us that deranged killers really are the minority. Good people are the majority. And the question is, what should and can good people do to prevent this from ever happening again? Toll-free number 877-4-HEAD-ON or 888-488-MARK. Call either one you like. Hope to hear from you, hear what your views are on all of this. We'll be right back after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head-On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head-On Radio Network. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm talking about Virginia Tech. I can't quite put it past me as I relive, I guess, some of the horror of the people that suffered there. I don't know what it says about me. When I first heard about it, I was in Colorado. I was attending a conference there, a conference on world affairs, which is actually a really cool thing where they invite about 100 people from across the nation. We speak to 50,000 people. It's really on all kinds of issues. Very interesting. But I was done with the conference, and I was skiing for a couple of days, and I heard about it. And at first, I guess I didn't want to know. Didn't want to ruin that beautiful day, but eventually, of course, I came to read virtually every detail, as I did, I should say, after September 11th. Don't know why that is. I guess it's because I wanted to think, what would I do? What would I do? And, you know, I don't know what I would do. You like to think in that circumstance that you'd be a hero, right? Think of the Holocaust survivor, Professor Livia Librescu. This is a man who was in a concentration camp, whom the Nazis tried to murder, along with millions of others, and who managed to escape that, living out his life quietly, apparently quite a scholar of engineering, teaching at Virginia Tech in the countryside. Here's gunshots. Here's the sound of someone at the door. Runs to the door and with all of the strength of his 76-year-old body, places his body against the door while kids proceed to jump out second-floor windows. They were bruised, but the children, most of them, in Professor Librescu's classroom survived. He, of course, did not. He gave his life to save his students. What creates such heroism? Who are these heroes? Ordinary people. Ordinary people who, when called to greatness, do greatness. You have to wonder what went through Professor Librescu's mind as he was at the door. I suspect he remembered his days in the concentration camp and decided to give up his elderly life so that people, students, much younger than he could have a full life. But then what are we to say about Kevin Granada, a military veteran that doesn't have his age in the newspaper, but he looks to be in his 30s, maybe 40s. When he heard the shots, he walked across the hall to a classroom, directed 20 frightened students safely into his locked quarters. They locked themselves in, but he went outside. Kevin Granada and Professor Wally Grant went downstairs to investigate. The killer spotted them, shot them both. Grant survived. Granada was killed. That's amazing. That's amazing. Who among us would have had the courage to do what Kevin Granada did? Or Liviu Librescu? We want to think we would, but would we? And so I want to honor these two very, very special men. As I was talking about gun control, Bob Kincaid has been listening in, and he writes me that actually hunters do use hollow point bullets. And, you know, I'm a city guy. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, school in the Northeast, in Boston and Los Angeles and Washington. I'm a city boy. I have to admit, I've never been hunting in my life. I don't really care to go hunting. There was a time I didn't even want to go fishing because I didn't really like killing the fish. I guess I've gotten over that. Though I don't fish that often. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not a vegetarian. I like the taste of meat. I think vegetarians are perhaps higher order of creation, more evolved, more moral beings than I. I still eat meat, but I certainly don't want to kill things. But Bob tells me that hollow points are used to bring down an animal in one shot. And so they have some use in hunting. All right. I accept that. I'm sure Bob in West Virginia knows more about hunting than I do. I don't know why we should be able to kill an animal in one shot. I mean, doesn't that take away the thrill and danger and difficulty of hunting? It's already kind of uneven, isn't it? Our ancestors shot bow and arrows. But okay, all right, so hollow points can be used in hunting. But why are they used in a handgun then? I mean, okay, I guess police need them. Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Hunters tell me that rifles are better shots. What is the goal of a semi-automatic handgun? Again, outside of the police and the army. To have a concealed gun that can shoot, as some of the killer's magazines had, and I'm trying, by the way, not to use his name, because I don't want to glorify him at all. I'll call him killer or murderer or deranged or mentally ill person. I may accidentally use his name. I'd like to talk more about the victims, frankly, than the killer, except for how to prevent this from happening again. But the killer had magazines that held 33 bullets. He had 17 magazines. Now, why do you need a semi-automatic handgun that shoots 33 bullets? We've already talked about you can't use it for hunting, right? You need a rifle for that. And for self-defense? I mean, if somebody comes after you and you can't shoot them with a semi-automatic pistol after 33 shots, I mean, you're going to get the gun that's going to kill you. This is not useful for self-defense. So what's it useful for? Well, I'm told it's good for target practice. It's a lot of fun. You can bring them to the range and shoot at things, and that's fun. Okay. Well, how about a semi-automatic 33 magazine gun pellet? I'm okay with that. Let's have the Glock gun pellet. Paint pellet. You know what I'm talking about. They throw the skeet up in the air and you shoot it, and heck, if you get paint on it, you win, okay? Same thrill. I mean, I guess you'll want to see things blow up, right? But boom, you hit it with the paint. Good. Nice fun. I'm okay with that. Are we really saying that people have to die because some people enjoy watching things explode? Is that really where we're going here? I've been reading through some gun statistics. For every justifiable handgun homicide, and these figures, by the way, are from Jonathan Safran Foer, who writes a very powerful op-ed in the Washington Post. He writes, according to the FBI, for every justifiable handgun homicide, there are more than 50 handgun murders. And that guns kept in the home for self-protection are 43 times more likely to kill a family member, friend, or acquaintance than to kill an intruder, according to a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. 43 times. Now, I know a lot of people keep a gun and they put it in their night table, thinking they'll be safer for an intruder. But you know what? Intruders are very rare. In fact, their 1/43rd is rare as using the gun against a family member, friend, or acquaintance. And if you include suicides, we have much greater numbers. 3,000 children are killed every year by firearms in the United States. 3,000 children. 10,000 total people, 3,000 children. Now, I want you to think about what that means. That means that on the same day as the Virginia Tech massacre, on that very same day, another 30 people were killed across the country that didn't get balloons released, that didn't get the governor and the president talking about them. 10 of them were children. Now, I know people love their guns. I understand that. But 94% of us are not hunters. We're not. 94% of us are not. And I have no problem with giving out hunting licenses to people who can pass tests and all kinds of tests. Not just tests to show you know how to use a gun, but tests to show that you're not, that you're sane, that you haven't committed a violent crime. In 2004, Foer writes, Jonathan Safran Foer, more preschoolers were killed by firearms than law enforcement. Think about that. In 2004, according to the Children's Defense Fund, more preschoolers were killed. Just preschoolers. All right? Three-year-olds, four-year-olds were killed than police officers. And the amount of children killed each year is three times greater than the number of men and women killed in Iraq. We have about 1,000 that die in Iraq a year, and that's awful. We have 3,000 children, 10,000 people that die due to firearms. In the United States of America, Great Britain has 50. 50. Toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON. You agree, disagree, just want to vent about Virginia Tech, feel free to do so. 877-4-HEAD-ON or 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to irs.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Whenever one of these events occurs, there always seems to be far more information and discussion about the killer than his victims. Again, I say his because most of these killers turn out to be male. So I want to talk a little bit about the victims. some of you know that I myself have had a family member that was murdered, my sister, 10 years ago. Maybe that's why I take these things so harshly. And at that time, too, the media focused more on her killer than her. So let's talk a little bit about the victims. Let's at least read their names out. Let's recognize that they were people of all walks of life, male and female, white, black, Asian, Indian, all races, people all over the earth, from all countries, 5 professors, 27 students. You look at their pictures and you see the promise of life. You see, I don't know, the indestructibility of people in their 20s who think that nothing can ever harm them. You see a future. Snuffed out. Ross Abdullah Alameddine. Christopher James Bishop. Brian Bloom. Ryan Clark. Austin Cloyd. Jocelyn Couture Nowak. Daniel Perez Cueva. Kevin Granada. Matthew Gwaltney. Caitlin Hammerin. Jeremy Herbstritt. Rachel Elizabeth Hill. Emily Jane Hilscher. Matthew Laporte. Jarrett Lee Lane. Henry Lee. Liviu Librescu. G.V. Loganathan. Partahi Lumbantoruan. Lauren McCain. Daniel Patrick O'Neill. Juan Ramon Ortiz. Minal Panchal. Aaron Peterson. Michael Pohl. Julia Pride, Mary Reed, Rima Samaha, Walid Shalan, Leslie Sherman, Maxine Turner, Nicole White. Now, what can we do to prevent Virginia Tech from ever happening again? The obvious answer, the obvious short answer, is don't let mentally ill people have guns. It's not that difficult. I mean, it is difficult sometimes to recognize who's mentally ill. I'll grant you that. But in this case, the killer had been already declared mentally ill. He was involuntarily detained at a psychiatric hospital by order of a court that said he was a danger to himself. That's enough for me. That's enough. Besides which, he'd stalked 2 women who had called the police. He was on some kind of prescription medication. We don't know which yet. 2 of his writing teachers, he was an English major, tried to get him into counseling. His poems and plays are extremely disturbing. I've read them. In fact, the students were so scared to be in class with him that many didn't show up after they read his plays. They were even discussing whether he could be a school shooter before it happened. He writes of violence and death and sexual abuse. He had no friends. He barely said a word. In fact, the thing that most people said about him is that when they talked to him, he simply did not respond. Now, this is a person with enough trouble that we should be able to prevent him from owning a gun. Now, I'll grant you there are people that just snap in this world. There are people, you know, that seem normal and go out and kill people. I'm sure there's some mass murderers like that. But this guy wasn't one of them. This guy fit the description of mass killers to a T. And it is against federal law for anyone who's been adjudged by a court to be so mentally ill that they are a danger to themselves or others, it is against federal law for them to get a gun. So how come this guy could go in, plop $571 down on a credit card, and buy himself a Glock semi-automatic pistol? He presented his driver's license and his green card, and the guy ran the background check at Roanoke Firearms. Came back okay. Sure, he lied on his form when it said he didn't have any mental health problems. That's true. Why wasn't the background check there? I mean, here I am working hard for years to try to get background checks for everyone to end the gun show loophole. This guy had a background check and he still got a gun. Why? Because Virginia, like most states, it's not just Virginia's fault. Most states in this country say that they're only going to turn over records if someone is involuntarily committed, if they are committed against their will to a mental hospital. And he was detained for a night, ordered to outpatient treatment. That apparently wasn't considered enough. Wasn't considered enough to prevent him from owning a gun. Well, Virginia is working on changing that law, and 49 other states should do the same. Let me go to the phone lines. Andy from the UK, a country I've been praising a lot today. Andy, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, man. How's it going? You all right?
So we look pretty crazy over there across the pond, don't we?
Well, America looks pretty crazy anyway, but the problem with this whole sort of gun law thing argument is that you need to have this argument at a time when there hasn't been a big shooting, because this shooting was nothing to do with your gun laws, although there were some problems with that. This shooting was to do with, at the very least, the drugs he was on. Because, I mean, he was on serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are basically hallucinogens.
Do we know? Because I've read he was on psychiatric drugs, but I haven't read that we know which drugs. Do we know that for a fact?
SSRIs. They won't say which one, but there's quite a few, and they all do basically the same thing. They cause people to have, like, murderous and suicidal thoughts. And ever since they've started using them with kids over here, the number of suicides and attacks have gone up. And almost every
That's really interesting. Now, are you saying, I assume that that's to a small minority of the people on the drugs? You're not saying it happens to everyone on the drugs?
It doesn't happen to everyone. The vast majority of people on the drugs have violent mood swings and real bad problems. But most of them won't go as far as, you know, going nuts and killing people or themselves. They normally...
Well, this is very interesting to me, and I have to admit, I'm certainly not a doctor, and I don't know a lot about these kinds of drugs. What is the goal of these drugs? How are they supposed to work?
Okay, well, it depends what you want to accept. I mean, do you want to accept what the industry say they're for, or do you want to accept what they actually do? I'll start with the industry. The industry say that they're supposed to level out violent mood swings. They're supposed to calm people down from the kind of, if they're manic, hyper happy.
So it's supposed to take bipolar people and bring their highs lower and their lows higher?
Yeah, they're supposed to smooth that sort of thing out. They're supposed to bring people who are depressed just up from depression so they can start to function again. And they're supposed to basically be a support drug for people who are in trouble. But what they actually are is a mass-marketed control drug. And what they're trying to do is get them into everyone. I mean, for example, I have a physical problem that causes me to have the occasional seizure. And I used to play rugby, and I've got a problem with my spine because of that. Instead of giving me like physiotherapy on the NHS over here, which is what they should do, they wanted me to take these SSRIs.
Help me out and help our listeners out. FSROs, what exactly are these drugs? You said they're serotonin inhibitors? They inhibit serotonin?
They prevent the body from using the serotonin it produces.
Serotonin, obviously, for those that don't know, that's the hormone that your brain, it's sort of the happy drug, if you will.
It's the feeling.
The hormone that makes you feel good.
Yeah, it's the feeling of ecstasy after an orgasm is serotonin, as well as some endorphins.
Okay, fair enough.
And other things like, if you win something, or if you just, you win a football match or a whatever game, you know, that sort of massive rush at the end is a mixture of serotonin and adrenaline, things like that. So
it inhibits that.
Hmm? Sorry?
It inhibits that. It stops serotonin.
It stops you from using that. So in theory, because serotonin doesn't just make you happy, the serotonin and other things like that also do the flip side. It's the activator, and it's what your brain is thinking at the time, depends on what you'll feel. Do you know what I mean? It's quite complicated biochemistry. But essentially, these drugs are supposed to stop you getting, like, out of control with hormones. And they're supposed to kind of chill things out.
Is it fair to say these drugs work for 90% of the people that are on them?
No, they work for maybe 1% or 2% of the people that take them, but the industry would tell you it's the other way around.
Really? So you're saying that 90% of the time they don't work?
Yeah, I'm saying 90% of the time they don't work. I mean, most of the people I know who have been on something like Prozac have had to come off it or have tried to kill themselves. Because Prozac's a really bad one. I mean, there was a guy I know who was taking Prozac because he was too stressed, And as soon as he started taking the Prozac, every time you saw him, you could see the veins sticking out all over him because he was just so tense the whole time. And this is a drug that's supposed to be calming him down. You know, these things are not given to us because they're good for us. They're given to us because they make a lot of money for the pharmaceutical company.
It's hard for me to know, and it's something definitely I want to explore. I know, for example, that for hyperactive children, they give them Ritalin, which
yeah,
is
Ritalin
supposed to be an upper,
too.
And yet apparently due to some strange thing in medicine that I don't claim to understand, it actually calms most of these kids down. So obviously it's an inexact science.
Ritalin works is the way it's advertised. It does calm children down, but it also makes them suicidal. I mean, Ritalin makes a lot of children suicidal. It's nowhere near as bad as Prozac is for suicidal thoughts, but it's very bad.
I'll tell you the one thing I get from this, though. I can't claim, you know, I have a law license. I don't have a medical degree.
Yeah.
So I can't claim to know, you know, how much of what you're saying I should take with a grain of salt. You sound reasonable. But one thing I'm absolutely convinced of is that if you're on any of these drugs, you shouldn't be able to own a gun.
Well,
and that's something I think that whatever we argue about to these drugs, and you may have some very good points here, I don't claim to know enough about it.
No,
but
sure.
Clearly it seems to me that when you get that prescription, that pharmacy should be required to put you on a background check and you shouldn't be able to own a gun.
That's a very sensible precaution. But, of course, you can't have that discussion just after this sort of event because you need to actually put the blame where the blame lies. And the kid would have killed people with or without the gun, okay? We know this because he is a classic psychotic case, yeah? I mean,
yes, but he couldn't have killed as many people. I mean, Neil Bohr came on air and said, what if he'd had a knife?
Well,
and the answer is he just couldn't have done as much damage with a knife.
But Mark, the next biggest killing on a campus wasn't done with a gun or a knife. It was done with a bomb. And you can get the how to make a bomb in 5 seconds off Google. And then you can go and buy hydrogen peroxide from, say, a wholesaler's for...
Well, you don't have to explain it to our listeners.
No, I'm just
but
saying,
I get your point.
You go and buy hydrogen peroxide, and it won't do you any good. But if you go on the web and know what you're doing with hydrogen peroxide, you can make a very dangerous bomb. I mean, the bombs...
Which is actually one of the few things I would support censorship of. I'd be willing to scrub those websites. About the only time I would ever support censorship.
You can find out how to make a nuclear weapon on the web. You know, all this stuff's out there. This is why the argument about Iran seeking nuclear weapons is so laughable. I mean, anybody who wanted to seek nuclear weapons just has to find $1 million and go to Russia.
Well, yes, but not all of us have the uranium. I mean, even if we know technically how
to
build it, it can't be that easy to do. More countries would have it.
Well, no, I mean, if you go to Russia and you can buy ready-made ones off corrupt generals and stuff, this happens pretty much all the time.
That is true.
Do you know what I mean?
I should tell you, Andy, when I worked in the House of Representatives, we actually had a bill soon after 9/11. It was within about a few months afterwards that would have spent billions of dollars to buy up some of these nukes in the Soviet Union.
That was the best idea I've heard coming out of the United States.
Thank you. I worked on that bill. It was a wonderful bill. Bush threatened to veto the bill. At that time, he wanted a tax cut for some rich people in America and said we couldn't afford it was about $20 billion, which is, you know, a lot of money, but far less than our war in Iraq.
It's pocket change when you compare it to the U.S. budget, generally.
It certainly is. Well, Andy, I want to thank you for calling and for listening all the way in Great Britain. I hope you continue to listen to The Horn.
Well, yeah, I've been a long-term listener of Bob's, and I sort of slowly started picking up the other shows as well. But it's completely weird hours for me over here.
Well, I should tell you, as I said, I've been praising your country that not only had the sense to get out of Iraq, but also, particularly with gun laws, has had a lot of sense. We would do well to emulate Great Britain in that regard.
Well,
thank
I'd
you
like
for your calling.
Well, that's true, but the problem is that you can get guns here anyway. If you're a criminal and you want them, there is gun crime here, and there is.
I know there's some, but you know, when you compare 50 versus 10,000, they're doing something right there.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think there are any less crazy people in England. I've seen your football games. You've got crazy murderous people, but luckily for us, you know, they use their fists rather than guns.
Well, yeah, most of the time. I mean, the problem is it's not just the guns. I mean, that's the thing. You've got a problem with your society. Your society is sick. I mean, you know, look at what your most favorite TV program is, 24. What does he do at the moment? He goes around torturing people nonstop. You know, you've got some problems aside from the guns in your country. There's drugs, legal and illegal. There's this bizarre stuff that's entertainment in your country. You know, you look at Sweden.
Some of that I'll accept, Andy, and some I won't, because I lived in Europe for a year, and I know that many Europeans actually enjoy the same awful stuff that we export over there. I personally don't watch any of that stuff.
That stuff is kind of, it's not really consumer choice with TV, is it? It's what they want to show you. So, you know, people are turning off the TVs across Europe now. Everyone's going on the web, I think. But Sweden's a country you need to look at, because they have lots of guns, lots of hunting. Lots more people hunt in Sweden than America, and they have virtually no gun there.
I also think part of it is the difference in our culture. We have people, yeah. We have immigrants from all over. We have different cultures melting together. We have racism. We have xenophobia.
Here's something you can use to annoy the right wing. The more socialized a country is, the more properly socialist a country is, the lower the murder rate. That's a fact.
Well, there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is because the more socialist a country is, the less extremes between rich and poor there are.
Yeah,
and
people are happier.
Crime is generally done by people in desperate shapes. Now, not this guy. This guy was just, you know, mad. But,
well, you could argue he was in a form of desperate shape. I mean, he should have been helped years and years ago.
Well, and it's a good point, and it's actually one that I want to make in the final minutes of the broadcast about how to care for the mentally ill, because we definitely need to do more of that in this country. Andy, thank you very much for your call. I hope you'll call again sometime.
I will do, man. See you then. Bye.
Thanks. Andy raises a number of very good points and actually has a nice segue into the last thing I wanted to talk about this hour, which is caring for the mentally ill. Prior to the 1980s, we had a number of people, great number of people, far more than now, in mental hospitals taking care of the mentally ill. Now, there's obviously problems with that. You certainly don't want people involuntarily committed unless they really are dangerous. I mean, that makes sense. You wouldn't want to be criticizing the president and end up in an insane asylum, and neither would I. So there definitely needs to be protections there, and I don't dispute that. But I think we've swung too far in the other direction. If you ask any homeless advocate, he or she will tell you that most of the homeless tend to be mentally ill in some way, some in small ways, some in large ways. And I want to read to you about Pete Early. Now, he's a father in Virginia, and of course they interviewed him because Virginia was the state where this crime occurred. But Here's a quote from him about his experience. He writes, "You cannot get help for someone you love who is psychotic until they have hurt themselves or someone else. Pete Early's son drove a car with his eyes closed, wrapped tinfoil around his head to protect himself from the CIA tapping into his brain, and broke into a neighbor's house to have a bubble bath. All of this was reported, and the state did nothing about it. They said he hadn't harmed himself enough. He didn't have what they call imminent danger. So they couldn't take action. They couldn't do anything to help him. So what did Pete Early do? He went in and he lied. Good for that father. He knew what he had to do to take care of his son. He lied. He said his son was threatening to kill him. And that got his son the treatment he needed. A mother writes that she collected medical reports concluding her 12-year-old son is a danger to himself and others. She gave those reports to the police, along with her son's drawing of men wielding knives and guns, and said that her son didn't need intensive treatment. Now, most mothers love their children. Most mothers wouldn't dream of making up stuff about their children. In fact, most mothers, if anything, are blind to their children's faults, right? I could see many cases where the child is a danger and the mother says it's no big deal. But when the mother of a 12-year-old boy says that her son is likely to be a danger to himself or to others, shouldn't we take her seriously? When a mother who loves her child is willing to say that about her child, we better wake up. I understand that we're not going to get rid of guns in the United States. I understand that. We are not England. I understand that. But I also think we need all kinds of protections. When students own guns, the university needs to know who are the students who own the guns, and their parents need to know. Even if they're sane, because they're in a public place, they're not quite adults yet. We inform people about child molesters, and it's awful, don't get me wrong, as child molestation is. As awful, awful as it is, most child molesters don't kill their victims. A mass murderer is more dangerous. And if someone's threatening to kill anyone, everyone needs to know. Everyone needs to know. Andy brings up very good points about these medications. He may be right that these medications should be banned. I can't say. I'm not a doctor. But clearly we need to know that people are on these psychiatric medications. Now, we have to be careful. We don't want to stigmatize the mental health, mentally ill. I understand that. I'm not saying put their names on a website. But certainly universities should know. When this particular killer, the Virginia Tech killer, was ordered to get psychiatric treatment, the head of the Virginia Tech Counseling Service, a guy by the name of Christopher Flynn, said, well, we never followed up with Cho. Oh, I said his name. I didn't want to. Shh. Flynn said that that depended on the courts. The courts said that's not his responsibility. That's the responsibility of the university. And so everyone points fingers at everyone else. And a crazy person gets a gun. One of the things that I learned when I worked on the Hill is very, very interesting regarding gun control and supporters of guns. There are extremely few people in numbers that really want their guns, that are against gun control. They're very, very small, but they're very, very loud. Even in Virginia, a southern state, a gun state, 52% think that gun laws need to be more restrictive in Virginia in a poll. 38% say they're about right. 8% say they should be less restrictive. Republicans, by a 43-8% margin, said they should be more restrictive about guns. Democrats, by 61-6%. Self-identified conservatives, half of them said it would make no difference if guns had been allowed on campus. But the remaining half, a plurality, 26-21%, said more people would have died if guns had been allowed on campus. Liberals was 27-16%. FBI studies show cops hit their target in the field, in real life, 1 out of 5 times. And they're far better trained than most gun users. FBI statistics also show that 9 out of 10 shootings with private firearms either hit the wrong person, the gun owner himself, or a member of the gun owner's family. I just don't think this had to happen. I'm not saying there aren't crazy people. There are crazy, dangerous people everywhere. There's always going to be the mentally ill. But I don't think it's a coincidence that in the United States, where we have the weakest gun laws, the worst attitudes toward firearms, and the most lethal kinds of guns and the kinds of bullets, yes, we have the highest number of deaths. We have bullets that go through body armor that you can buy. So what's the answer? The answer is certainly better mental health care. The answer is that it's a privilege, not a right, to own a gun. Second Amendment be damned. That's not what it's about. Anyone who's read the Second Amendment knows it. A well-regulated militia, it says, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Yes, we have a right to our National Guards. Yes, this came from revolutionaries fighting against the British. Yes, it has practically no meaning today. But even though a very small minority of Americans supports the gun lobby, look at this. Almost $1 million was given in the 06 election by gun rights supporters, and less than $50,000, 1/20th the amount, was given by gun control supporters. The great majority of Americans are for gun control, but they don't speak up. The gun nuts, sorry, are louder. They give out more money. They care more. Maybe some of us need to care more. Maybe some of us should look at Virginia Tech, give some money to the Brady Center for Gun Control or other organizations that are working to do things like, at the very least, require the mentally ill to go through a background check to own a gun. I'll conclude in the words of Professor Lucinda Roy. Blacksburg isn't a place of massacres. Blacksburg is my home in Southwest Virginia. It's boring. That's why I like it. We are Virginia Tech. The fighting gobblers, the ones who wear the funny turkey hats and plant tasteless turkey sculptures all over town, we are not the stuff of massacres. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill, the House is expected to vote today on a $100 billion war appropriations bill. The measure contains an October 1st deadline to bring the troops home. The president has vowed to veto any bill containing a timetable for troop withdrawal. Congressional committees are stepping up their investigation of the Bush administration today. The House Oversight Committee approved a subpoena for Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Rice, who was President Bush's national security advisor in 2003, is being subpoenaed to find out what she knew about key elements in the invasion of Iraq. The House committee also granted immunity to a former top aide to U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Senators from both parties continue their investigation into the Attorney General's involvement in the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. The senators, including Arlen Specter, have written Gonzalez, pushing him to respond to many of the more than 70 questions he declined to answer during last week's hearing before the Judiciary Committee. Senator John McCain has officially announced his candidacy for president. In a speech from New Hampshire, the Arizona Republican and Vietnam POW says he is running for president to protect the country and keep it strong. If elected, the 70-year-old McCain would be America's oldest first-term president. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow will return to work on Monday. Snow, who is being treated for cancer, has been away from his job for several weeks. Hitting a new record today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed past 13,000 as strong earnings reports rolled in from some of the country's biggest companies. The boost is a sign that American corporations remain healthy despite a cooling economy. Wall Street numbers later in our business section. A former Alaska congressional aide has become the 11th person to be convicted on federal charges in the Jack Abramoff scandal. The aide has pleaded guilty to accepting gifts worth tens of thousands of dollars from lobbyist Abramoff in exchange for privileged information about the Homeland Security Department. The UN says